Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Tuesday, March 19th. Today, Colorado Sun water reporter Shannon Mullane wades through the latest round of negotiations for how the Colorado River water is allocated during dry years. Before we begin, thanks for listening to the Daily Sunup from the Colorado Sun. Please take a moment to rate and review us in your podcast player. Tell us what you think of the show, share your ideas, and help us reach new listeners. Thank you. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. In late 1854, southeastern Colorado experienced violent raids by a Mauache Ute faction led by Tierra Blanca. He most notably attacked El Pueblo on Christmas Eve. These raids continued into the following year, sparking fears among residents. The U.S. Army and New Mexico volunteers retaliated on this day in 1855 near present-day Sawatch, aiming to quell Ute resistance. The campaign involved forces led by Colonel Thomas Fauntleray and Scout Kit Carson and culminated in a decisive encounter that forced Tierra Blanca to seek peace by the summer of 1855. New Mexico's governor, David Meriwether, reported to federal authorities, quote, "I can now have the pleasure of informing you that peace has once again been restored to this territory." Before we continue, do you live near Loveland and want to join our networking event? The Colorado Sun is hosting a free networking evening in partnership with the Loveland Arts Creative District and Artworks Center for Contemporary Art on March 27th. RSVP today. Space is limited. Visit coloradosun.com/events and click the Loveland event button. We hope to see you there. Next, our feature story.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Sunup today. I'm David Krause, one of the editors here at the Colorado Sun, and I thought I'd invite Sun Water reporter Shannon Mullane on to talk some latest updates and some Colorado River negotiation talks. Hey there, Shannon, how's your day going?
Going great, Dave. How's yours?
Not too bad. Storm moved out. Probably looking at some good snowpack, I would think. You'll report on that later on this week, but some nice day after the snowstorm moved through for sure. Hey, you're down in Durango now, right?
I am, yeah.
Got back from Denver over the weekend. So how was that drive?
Pretty good. Some spots around the Wolf Creek Pass, but roads were fine. Happy to see some snow move through Colorado, though.
Yeah, that was a good one for sure. Hey, wanted to get our listeners, kind of like I mentioned, caught up on what's been going on between the Upper Basin and the Lower Basin states as far as the Colorado River and sharing goes and the water. It's been a topic of conversation for years now. You've done plenty of great reporting on that in the past. You had a story last week, Shannon, kind of looking at the latest round of conversations, negotiations. Can you kind of tell us or get us caught up on what's going on between the Upper Basin states and the Lower Basin states?
Yeah, so in short, lots of disagreement and some places of agreement. But to give a little bit of background about what's happening with the basin right now, there are negotiations that are part of this federal process. And the federal process is meant to decide how the river's water will be managed after 2026. And the negotiations are meant to replace the current guidelines that were established in 2007. And those guidelines really focused on two key reservoirs called Lake Mead and Lake Powell. Those reservoirs together make up most of the basin's storage, 92% of the total storage capacity in the entire Colorado River Basin. And that's a huge basin, right? It provides water to 40 million people. It includes 7 states in the U.S., 2 states in Mexico, 30 tribal nations. So it's a very important water source. And Mead and Powell are key to how that whole system functions. And so river officials from each of the states have put forward their thoughts on how they want to see the river managed after 2026. And there are some places where, while they disagreed, they've submitted 2 different proposals. They couldn't agree on 1 7-state idea. So that's where we're at right now.
And just to remind our listeners, you've got the Upper Basin, which is Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, New Mexico, correct?
Correct.
And then the Lower Basin is where a lot of the water is used, right? The bigger part of the population of the whole River Basin. You talk about Nevada, California, Arizona, and then, of course, it also feeds, what, part of Mexico and then 30 or so tribes, is that right?
Yep, that's all correct.
So where are we, let's break it down, where are we as far as what they kind of agree on as far as who should bear the brunt of water load or water savings or anything like that? What are we agreeing upon among the seven states?
Yeah, so there are a few points where these state officials have found commonalities. They're in larger ideas. And so each state has a top negotiator. Ours is Becky Mitchell. And they have been in these negotiations for months. The negotiations haven't really moved forward all that much in the past few months. But, you know, when these officials are talking about their views on the future of the Colorado River Basin, they agree that, for example, climate change is exacerbating conditions in the basin. That's where we're talking about this prolonged drought we've had for the last 2 decades or so. They are aiming for a plan that is sustainable over coming years with a lot of different conditions in the River Basin. They want to give water users, you know, farmers, cities, industries, everybody, predictability, and so people can plan. Everybody agrees that the current rules didn't do enough. They didn't keep the big reservoirs from falling to historic lows. And they even agree that water cuts do need to happen. So that's their basically where their points of agreement.
So then let's talk about some disagreements, Shannon, and maybe specifically about things that would affect those of us here in Colorado. You mentioned Becky Mitchell, who heads up the Colorado delegation for the water talks, but what are some of her concerns as well as some other water officials in the state as far as some of these proposals and who would share on the years that we have heavy drought or have to have some cutbacks?
Yeah. Well, as it tends to be with water issues, the devil is in the details. And so really the disagreements became more apparent when everybody was able to see what was in these two different proposals. And one of the central areas of disagreement has to do with who is cutting back on their water and how. And so the Upper Basin, those four states submitted one proposal together. And they said, you know what, in the Upper Basin, we will make sure that we can send our required releases downstream. We will fulfill our obligations. They said, we'll try and continue coming up with programs and ideas to conserve water through voluntary, temporary, and compensated measures. But most of the shortages outlined in the Upper Basin plan actually happened in the Lower Basin. You know, the Upper Basin officials said, we really need to tie how these reservoirs release water and how reservoir managers make decisions to store water to what is actually happening in the river instead of maybe projected storage levels or something like that. And that's a change from the current guidelines. So they want it to be tied closer to the hydrology. And then they want to look at those storage levels and have the Lower Basin water users change their use based on that storage. And so if we're thinking of any cuts, it would happen in Arizona, California, and Nevada. So that's one, that's the Upper Basin idea. That's different than the Lower Basin. Lower Basin officials are like, hey, we're all in the same boat. We're all adapting to the same climate conditions, and everybody needs to share in the pain. And so they've said, when we're thinking about total storage, we're going to look at more reservoirs, including some that are upstream, including some that are in Colorado, like Blue Mesa, which is Colorado's largest reservoir, and it's federally operated. Then they said, we're going to look at this total storage, and when our storage takes a hit, when it reaches a certain level, then everybody is going to start sharing in the water cuts. And that includes Colorado. And so in that scenario, It depends on a lot of details. There's a lot that still needs to be worked out. But Coloradans would be needing to conserve water under certain conditions, according to the Lower Basin proposal. And that has brought up some concerns for Becky Mitchell, for other water experts from Colorado. And so that's kind of where we're at. It's like, what are the water cuts that everybody wants, and how are they going to be shared? That's the main point of disagreement.
You had a quote, I think it was an interesting one, Becky Mitchell talking about these would wreck communities and economies. Shanna, what does she mean by that?
Right. So in Colorado, when it's a dry year, Becky Mitchell's argument is we're already taking cuts. We have a system called prior appropriation, where in dry water years, senior water users get first access, get their water. But people who are further down the line might get cut off earlier in the season. They might not get their full irrigation supply if they're a farmer. And so Becky Mitchell's saying, and the other, you know, upper basin officials are saying, hey, we're already doing this. There are even years when we're very, very tight. And so if you're asking us to send more downstream, then it's going to wreck communities and economies, was what she told us. And other water experts around the state are kind of on the same page. I've heard a lot of agreement with the state's position from water experts in Colorado. And so they want to know more about, will these cuts that we already take count toward the conservation that the Lower Basin is asking for? Like, how would that accounting be done? They want to know how each of these proposals would change based on different river conditions. And so different states are doing a lot of modeling right now. And the idea of including more upstream reservoirs like Blue Mesa in Colorado in these wider operations, I think is giving Colorado water experts a moment of pause, because what I've heard is, you know, it's been a little discouraging to see how low Meade and Powell have dropped. So why would we want to loop more reservoirs in? So those are kind of the things that I've heard when Colorado water experts are trying to understand what's in these proposals.
So let's always try to end on a positive note, or at least spinning things forward, right, on the sun up. Shannon, what do you think as far as a timetable on decision-making? Is there a deadline where they've got to come up with this? Because as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, it's has to do with, you know, after 2026. But what do you see happening in the next few months? When are we going to know any more movement on this?
So I know that water experts want to see what the modeling shows. They want to know what the federal models are looking at. And I think they're hoping for updates this year on that. But whether that'll happen is up, obviously, to the Bureau of Reclamation. So that's one thing people are interested in. The seven state officials have said that they are all willing to come back to the negotiating table. You know, they want a seven-state solution. This particular point in time, the negotiations are stalled, but they are willing to come back. They've said that, but what I've asked recently, if any meeting is on the calendar, no meeting is on the calendar. So we'll see how that goes. And then as far as the federal process is concerned, the Bureau of Reclamation has as a target deadline an update in December. And at that point, what Reclamation wants to share is its environmental analysis of these proposals, and then it wants to offer draft alternatives to give the basin different options to explore and consider. And then after that, in 2025, we'll have a few more steps to take. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, I really appreciate you kind of breaking all this down for us today, Shannon. And I know there's a lot going on. Like you said, a lot of it is in the details, and having somebody who can specifically focus on water and water issues here at the Colorado Sun is really helpful for us. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of the Sun Up. If you haven't already, you can check out Shannon's story. You can go to coloradosun.com. and click on that environment tab up at the top of the page. You can find all our previous water reporting there as well. Want to remind everyone, The Sun is a member of the Trust Project. You can see our commitment to trusted journalism at coloradosun.com/ethics. And when you have a minute, give The Sun a 5-star review. We know you're listening in, so you must like us a little bit. But we always appreciate any kind of love that you can give us on your different devices you're listening to. So appreciate that. Shannon, again, I appreciate the time and the perspective on this, and hope you have a great week.
Thanks. Back at you, Dave.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado's plan to import lower-priced prescription drugs from Colorado is meeting resistance from federal regulators and drug makers. State documents reveal a tense back-and-forth correspondence between state officials and the Food and Drug Administration, particularly over what it would take to get the low-cost prescription drug program off the ground. And nearly every Canadian wholesaler approached by the state said they are barred from exporting drugs under their contracts with drug makers. State officials said they are working to persuade drug makers to lower prices and consulting with the FDA to find sources of low-cost drugs. Electric scooters, like the ones seen zipping around downtown Denver and other cities, are the cleanest transportation option available when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions. And public buses are among the dirtiest. Those are the surprising findings of an ongoing study by Colorado State University researchers. The study found the average bus trip has only 7 to 8 passengers, making a commute on a diesel-powered bus one of the least efficient methods per passenger mile when accounting for greenhouse gases. Even walking affects greenhouse gas levels because people require food to keep going, and commercial food production also produces harmful emissions. A storm that dumped snow on parts of Colorado last weekend was a boon for the state's water supply, leaving all major river basins at or above their normal snowpack for this time of year. Colorado's snowpack stands above average at 109% of normal. Snow in the mountains is a vital source of water for Colorado and other western states as it melts. The recent storms could also blunt the effect of a dust layer that has recently settled on top of snowpack in parts of the state, reducing the risk of early melting. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
This is Christina Pritchett, Marketing and Events Specialist at the Colorado Sun. In my role, I get to witness the Sun's impact on our state firsthand. I always leave our events feeling inspired by those who attend and share the impact that the Sun has in their daily lives. If you're a follower of the Sun, please reach out and tell us what you think of our reporting and let us know how it makes a difference in your life. The Sun is member-supported, so if you're not yet a member, please consider joining us today at coloradosun.com/join.